Hey, I'm Dr. Z, and I'm a neurosurgeon. So that means long hours, early rounds, late nights, and everything in between. And through it all, I wear FIGS because they're built for what I do. Through the chaos, through the hours, and through whatever the day throws at me, they do their job so I can do mine. They're comfortable when it counts and functional when I need them the most. So where do you wear your FIGS? On shift, on call, on the couch in the break room, listening to this podcast, wherever it is, they fit right in. And now listeners of this podcast can get 15% off their first order. Just head to wearfigs.com and use code FIGSRX at checkout. That's wearfigs.com, code FIGSRX.
There's a lot of pressure to wear the right clothes for every situation, but the clothes don't make the man. With Mack Weldon, you can build a wardrobe that looks polished in any setting and tells the world you stay you wherever you go. Go to MacWeldon.com and get 25% off your first order of $125 or more with promo code MAC25. That's MACKWELDON.com. Promo code MAC25.
This is a true crime in real time update from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast.
For nearly 30 years, Tupac Shakur's murder was the crime that everyone knew about, but nobody could solve. A shooting in the middle of the Las Vegas Strip. A celebrity victim, a long list of suspects, and yet no arrests, no charges. Just theories, speculation, and the occasional so-called confession from people who seemed to enjoy playing the role of, I know what happened. But in 2023, after decades of silence from law enforcement, that changed. A man named Dwayne Keefe D. Davis, who had spent years talking about what went down that night, was arrested and charged with Tupac's murder. Now, if you followed this case, you know Keefe D wasn't just some random guy who got picked up off the street. He was a known figure in the story, someone who had spent the last decade publicly discussing, in great detail, his alleged role in the shooting. He had gone on TV, written a book, and given interviews basically outlining how the whole thing happened. It was the kind of thing that makes you scratch your head and go, wait, you can just do that? Just casually admit to being involved in a famous murder and then go about your life? Apparently, yes, until law enforcement finally decided to act. But the question that lingers is, why now? Why, after nearly three decades, did they finally move in on Keefe D? The answer lies in a combination of factors: his own words, new evidence, and a fresh push by investigators who apparently weren't ready to let this case become another mystery lost to time. Let's go back to that night. September 7th, 1996. Tupac Shakur is in Las Vegas for the Mike Tyson versus Bruce Seldon fight at the MGM Grand. By now, Tupac is one of the biggest rappers in the world, loved by millions, hated by some, but undeniably a larger-than-life figure. That night, in the casino lobby, something happens that sets off a deadly chain of events. Tupac and his entourage spot a man named Orlando Anderson, allegedly a member of the Southside Crips, someone who had previously been accused of trying to rob a Death Row Records associate. The moment they see him, they attack. It's caught on MGM security footage. Tupac, Suge Knight, and others beating Anderson down right there in the casino. Fast forward a few hours, Tupac is riding in Suge Knight's BMW, heading to a club. They stop at a red light. That's when a white Cadillac pulls up next to them, shots ring out, and Tupac is hit multiple times. He survives for 6 days in the hospital before dying on September 13, 1996. The immediate speculation is that this was retaliation for the casino beatdown. And honestly, that theory makes a lot of sense. It wasn't some random attack. This was targeted. A response. A kill shot in a war between rival gangs and rival egos. But the frustrating part? Despite the theories, despite the obvious gang connections, and despite the fact that Tupac had been feuding with people left and right, the case goes cold for years. This is where Keefe D enters the picture. Keefe D wasn't just some guy on the sidelines. He was a known figure in the streets of Compton, connected to the Southside Crips and, more importantly, connected to Orlando Anderson, the man who most believed was the shooter that night. And for years, Keefe D sat on this information. He was questioned, sure, but nothing came of it. That changed in 2008 when he agreed to talk to authorities as part of a federal investigation into gang activity. And in that conversation, Keefe D allegedly admitted that he was in the car that fired the shots at Tupac. Now, let's pause here for a second. You'd think a statement like that would have led to immediate charges, right? Wrong, because at the time, Keefe D was supposedly speaking under what's known as a proffer agreement, essentially a legal deal where he could share information without it being used against him in court. So, despite admitting he was there when Tupac was shot, Keefe D walked away. And then, in 2018, he started talking again. This time, not under any legal protection. He did interviews, he wrote a book, he went on camera and spoke openly about what happened that night. In his version of the story, he described himself as the shot caller in the car, the one who allegedly handed the gun to the shooter. He didn't name names outright, but if you read between the lines, it wasn't hard to figure out what he was implying. For years, law enforcement seemed content to just let him talk. Maybe they thought he was bluffing. Maybe they didn't care. But in 2023, something changed. Las Vegas police raided his home, collected evidence, and within months arrested him. The charge? Murder with the use of a deadly weapon, with a gang enhancement. And just like that, Tupac's murder wasn't a cold case anymore. But here's where things get interesting. Because Keefe D's arrest wasn't just about what happened in 1996, it was about what he'd been saying ever since. The prosecution's case isn't built on new forensic evidence or a surprise witness. It's built largely on Keefe D's own words, words he voluntarily gave to the world over and over again. In many ways, it's one of the most bizarre self-incriminations in modern crime history. But Keefe D's legal team, they're not rolling over. From the moment he was charged, his defense has been trying to punch holes in the case. First, they argued that waiting nearly three decades to prosecute him was unconstitutional, that the state had simply taken too long. That argument didn't work. Then they said that back in 2008, when Keefe D gave his statement, he had immunity. That argument didn't work either, and now they're shifting to a new strategy. A private investigator working for the defense has allegedly found witnesses who claim that Keefe D wasn't even in Las Vegas when Tupac was shot. If true, that would blow the prosecution's case wide open. And it's this claim, the idea that Keefe D has an alibi, that has caused the trial to be delayed. So, what does this mean? It means that nearly 30 years later, the question of who really killed Tupac is still twisting and turning. The prosecution believes they finally have their man. The defense says they've got new evidence that could clear him. And while the world waits to see how this plays out in court, one thing is clear. The fight over Tupac's murder is far from over. And that's where things get even more complicated. Because if the trial does happen, and if it goes the way the prosecution wants, then Keefe D could be the only person ever convicted for Tupac's murder. But if the defense manages to convince a jury that he wasn't even there, then we're right back where we started. The trial was supposed to be the moment when everything finally came to a head. After decades of speculation, dead-end investigations, and theories that had been debated to exhaustion, a jury would finally hear the case against Dwayne Keefe D. Davis. The date was set, mid-2025. Nearly 30 years after Tupac Shakur was gunned down in Las Vegas, the man prosecutors claim orchestrated the murder was going to stand trial. For many, this was more than just another courtroom proceeding. It was history in the making. Keefe D was the first, and likely the only, person ever charged in connection to Tupac's murder. For years, people had speculated about who was responsible. Some pointed to the Southside Crips, others to the East Coast-West Coast rivalry that had reached a boiling point between Tupac and the notorious B.I.G. Some even entertained wild theories that Tupac had faked his death and was still alive somewhere in Cuba, smoking cigars and watching the chaos unfold. But in the end, there was only one person sitting in a courtroom, facing the weight of those decades-old questions. The prosecution's case leaned heavily on Keefe D's own words. They didn't have forensic evidence. No gun had been recovered. No DNA was left at the scene. The murder weapon had vanished into thin air like so many others in gang-related killings. What they had was Keefe D himself, a man who had, over the years, put himself at the center of the story. His interviews, his memoir, his candid discussions about the night Tupac was shot, they were the foundation of the state's argument. he had repeatedly claimed that he was in the Cadillac that pulled up next to Sugae Knight's BMW. He had all but admitted to handing the gun to the shooter. To the prosecution, this was a man who had implicated himself one too many times. They weren't building a case against him so much as taking the case he had built against himself and running with it. But Keefe D's defense team had other plans. They knew that if the case was built on his own words, their job was to tear those words apart. Their early strategy was simple. Argue that Keefe D was just a storyteller, an old gangster who enjoyed playing up his role in one of hip-hop's greatest mysteries. Maybe he had exaggerated. Maybe he had taken credit for things he hadn't actually done. Maybe he had been lying all along, trying to cash in on his connections to the most infamous murder in rap history. At first, they took the legal route, arguing that the case should be thrown out entirely. Their main claim? The state had waited too long. The defense argued that prosecuting Keefe D now, nearly 30 years after the fact, was unconstitutional. They pointed to the Sixth Amendment, the right to a speedy trial. How could Keefe D defend himself against allegations from 1996 when key witnesses were dead, evidence was lost, and memories had faded? The case, they said, was too old to be fair. The prosecution countered that Keefe D himself was the reason for the delay. He had spent years publicly discussing the murder, effectively reviving the case every time he opened his mouth. If he hadn't been so vocal, if he hadn't repeatedly made himself a suspect, maybe this trial wouldn't be happening. That argument didn't work. The judge rejected the motion to dismiss. The trial would go forward. So the defense pivoted. If they couldn't argue that the case was too old, they'd argue that Keefe D had been legally protected when he made his 2008 confession. Back then, he had spoken to law enforcement as part of a federal gang probe. His team claimed that he had done so under an immunity deal, a proffer agreement that meant his statements couldn't be used against him in court. If that was true, the entire case could fall apart. But the prosecution wasn't buying it. They argued that no such deal existed. And even if Keefe D thought he had immunity, it wasn't valid in a state murder case. Once again, the judge agreed. No immunity, no dismissal. The trial was still on. That was when Keefe D's defense team changed tactics again. If they couldn't argue about the delay or the immunity deal, they'd go for something bigger. He wasn't even there. This was the bombshell that changed everything. According to a private investigator working with the defense, witnesses had come forward claiming that Keefe D was not even in Las Vegas on the night Tupac was shot. These witnesses, whose identities were not immediately disclosed, allegedly had information that could completely contradict the prosecution's case. If they could prove that Keefe D wasn't in Vegas that night, it wouldn't just create doubt, it would destroy the case entirely. The defense needed time. They had to track down these witnesses, verify their statements, and figure out how to introduce them in court. They filed a request to delay the trial, arguing that they could not adequately prepare without investigating this new alibi evidence. Judge Carly Kearney agreed. The trial, once set for mid-2025, was pushed back a full year, to February 2026. It was a massive win for Keefe D's team. They had gone from fighting just to get the case thrown out to now having an entire year to build a new defense. And with that extra time, they could dig even deeper, maybe find more witnesses, maybe develop an even stronger argument that Keefe D wasn't there, maybe even shift the blame to someone else entirely. But the prosecution wasn't backing down. They still had his own words, and they weren't about to let him escape the case by suddenly claiming he had nothing to do with it. For them, the trial delay was just that. A delay. They were confident that when the day finally came, they could prove that Keefe D wasn't just involved, but that he was the key player in a murder that had gone unsolved for far too long. And with the clock now ticking toward 2026, both sides had their work cut out for them. The prosecution had to make sure their case was airtight, that Keefe D's own words were enough to convict him, and the defense? They had to make sure that when the trial finally began, they could introduce enough doubt to make a conviction impossible. What happens next isn't just about Keefe D's fate. It's about whether Tupac's murder will finally have a legal conclusion, or whether it will remain an unsolved mystery, even after all these years. With the trial now pushed back to 2026, the clock is ticking for both sides. Keefe D's defense team has bought themselves time. Time they desperately needed. Time that could mean the difference between a conviction and walking free. But it's not just about delaying the inevitable. They know that when this case finally makes it to trial, the prosecution is going to come out swinging, armed with every statement, every interview, every public declaration Keefe D ever made about that night in 1996. And if the defense isn't prepared, those words alone could be enough to bury him. So what do they do with this extra year? First, they track down these new witnesses who supposedly claim Keefe D wasn't even in Las Vegas when Tupac was shot. It's the kind of claim that, if solid, could shatter the entire case. But that's a big if. Witness memories fade, stories change. And with a crime as old as this one, credibility is everything. If these witnesses can't hold up under scrutiny, if their statements contradict known evidence or each other, then the defense is right back where they started. Beyond that, they'll be working to create reasonable doubt by pointing fingers elsewhere. They don't necessarily have to prove Keefe D is innocent. They just need to convince a jury that someone else could have done it. This means digging into alternative theories, revisiting old suspects, and hinting at the idea that other players may have orchestrated the hit on Tupac. Maybe someone at death row had a reason to want him dead. Maybe a rival from the East Coast had something to do with it. Or maybe, just maybe, the real shooter is already gone, and Keefe D is just an easy scapegoat. And then there's the task of dismantling Keefe D's own words. This is the tightrope they have to walk. On one hand, they can't ignore the fact that he has talked about this murder a lot. Too much. But on the other hand, they can argue that what he said in interviews and in his book wasn't a confession. It was storytelling, exaggeration, maybe even outright lies designed to make himself look more important in the eyes of history. He wasn't admitting guilt, they'll argue. He was selling a story. After all, if someone really played a key role in a murder, would they go on Vlad TV and casually talk about it? The goal for the defense is simple. Create enough doubt that a jury hesitates. Because in a case this old, with no physical evidence and no forensic proof tying Keefe D to the crime, doubt is their greatest weapon. But the prosecution isn't sitting around waiting for 2026 to roll in. They know what's coming. They know the defense is going to try to discredit Keefe D's past statements, and they're preparing to reinforce them. Their job is to prove that his admissions weren't just for entertainment value, they were the truth. Expect them to bring in expert witnesses, gang investigators, maybe even former associates who will testify that Keefe D's words were real, not just some gangster folklore designed to sell books. They'll also be working to poke holes in these new defense witnesses. Just because someone shows up decades later claiming Keefe D wasn't there, doesn't mean they're telling the truth. Were they actually in a position to know? Have they changed their story over the years? Are they credible at all? If the prosecution can prove these witnesses are unreliable, or worse, lying, that entire alibi defense collapses. And while this case doesn't have forensic evidence like DNA or murder weapons, prosecutors will still try to lean on forensic analysis. Ballistic experts might be brought in to discuss the type of gun used, or how the shooting was carried out, or whether the known facts about the crime line up with Keefe D's version of events. Every detail matters. Every inconsistency in the defense's story is an opportunity to undermine their case. More than anything, the prosecution knows that this isn't just about convicting Keefe D. It's about delivering some form of justice in one of music's most infamous unsolved murders. This trial is about more than just one man sitting in a courtroom. It's about closing the book on a case that has haunted hip-hop for nearly three decades. It's about giving Tupac's family answers. It's about proving that no matter how much time has passed, justice can still be served. But what happens if the defense is successful? If reasonable doubt creeps into the jury's mind, if Keefe D walks, then we're left with the same question that has haunted this case from the beginning. Who really killed Tupac Shakur? And will we ever truly know?
You just made it through an episode of Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Congrats on surviving the ads. Want to skip them completely next time?
What is that?
Join the True Crime Today Premium Plus channel on Apple Podcasts. Ad-free episodes, exclusive early access, and no interruptions. Just pure crime storytelling. Try it free for 3 days. Don't wait.
Bitchin' stuff, dude.
Hit subscribe now on Apple Podcasts and get ahead of the mystery.
You know what I'm saying?